And this program is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. And of course, local is all relative if you're in our listening area. And we try to cover wherever you are. And on today's program, we're going to be talking about at least one aspect of what's called the Red Note New Music Festival at Illinois State University in Normal. Carl Schimmel is the festival director. It actually opened yesterday with a concert for wind ensemble and will continue tonight with a concert for string quartet, including a quartet by Elliot Carter and quartets by composers that whose names are entirely new to me and likely are to you as well. That recital will be at 8 o'clock tonight. On Wednesday, it is, where did I put my Wednesday schedule? I seem to have misplaced my Wednesday schedule. Well, suffice it to say that there is a concert Wednesday night. I'm deliberately skipping Tuesday for the moment. And then on Thursday, another concert for band that will feature some music by Steve Danu, which is a pretty new piece, and some not as new. Richard Strauss's music, Virgil Thompson, and others. I'll be talking about that concert on tomorrow's Live and Local. So I skipped tomorrow night's concert, which is at 8 o'clock in Kemp Recital Hall on the ISU campus in Normal, because that concert is the focus of the first portion of our program today. It's featuring music by American composer Joan Tower, who is one of our more celebrated living American composers. It's going to be quite a lot on that program, not only her music, but also some of her students' music and people who she certainly knows about. Mark Mellitz will have his music played on that piece, Maxwell McKee. And then there are six or seven pieces by Joan Tower herself. I'll be talking with her very shortly here on Live and Local. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. This is music by Joan Tower, which I actually had a chance to present once in a concert by the Prairie Ensemble, an orchestra that I conduct that occasionally features music for chamber ensemble, small chamber groups, which this is. It's called Petrushkates. Joan Tower herself is at the piano. We just heard a piece called Petrushkates by American composer Joan Tower for a flute, clarinet, violin, cello, and piano. Happens to be a recording that she was involved in with a group that she helped to found called the Da Capo Chamber Players. And that piece is one of several that will be on a concert tomorrow night at Illinois State University as part of their Red Note Music Festival. And the recital starts at 8 o'clock at Kemp Recital Hall, and it features mostly music by Joan Tower. There's also a couple of other composers represented. Joan Tower is on the phone with me right now. Thanks for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
So you're going to be doing a sort of a mini residency by at least coming to ISU.
Yes.
During this part of the program, and I wonder what you'll be doing when you're here, and how that is similar or not to some other residencies that you do with some regularity.
Well, I'll be meeting with the composers there and listening to their music, and I will also be coaching my own music in rehearsals, and I'll be meeting faculty and performers and students. It's the kind of thing I do at most places.
And sometimes they are short-term residencies such as this one. Sometimes you do quite long ones.
Well, I'm getting unless it's something quite extraordinary. For example, the University of Redlands in California is doing 3 concerts of my music, which is I've never experienced that before. I'm going to be there for at least a week, at least. So that should be fun. But I usually it's a 2 or 3 day thing. And one of my favorite activities is working with performers. I love to work with performers.
So, for example, at this particular festival, there will be both students performing and faculty members performing. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel that you need to take a different approach depending upon who's playing your music?
I think you have to write the best piece you can. And you can make it more virtuosic. I wrote a couple of competition pieces for a violin, for the Indianapolis violin competition, also one for the piano, San Antonio piano competition. So I figured, well, those pieces had to be challenging because they're competition pieces. But by and large, I think you just try to write the best piece you can. And if there's so many good players around now, getting younger and younger, and they all manage to play my music, which is not easy. My music's not easy, but they manage to do it somehow. So that's a compliment to me, because I feel if the piece is worth that kind of struggle, they'll do it, you know. But the music has to pull that weight. It has to make you want to learn it, even if it's hard. I mean, I've been a performer long enough to know that much.
You're a pianist, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And do you then feel, when you're writing for piano, a little more confident than for other instruments?
No, writing for piano is very difficult.
Really? How so?
When I finally got around to writing for piano, which was kind of late in my life, actually, which was strange. I mean, I'm talking about featured piano, not piano within an ensemble. It was a challenge. I think it's because it's such a huge palette, and it has to have a harmonic base to it. It's in some sense. It's not an easy instrument. Most composers will tell you that it's not an easy instrument.
Even if you're familiar with it as a performer.
Even if you can play it, yeah.
There's certainly...
Although it's not as hard as the guitar.
Oh, yeah? How so?
The guitar is killer. And the organ, too.
What makes the guitar difficult to write for?
Well, it's because it's not built like any other instrument. So the fingering is... you know, there's so many A's all over the place in different positions, and you have to know the separation of fingers. You really have to know what you're doing with the guitar, because otherwise the note will not sound if you don't know how to separate the fingers, you know, with chords. I wrote a piece for Sharon Isbin,
mm-hmm.
and she gave me a manual. And I threw it away because me and manuals don't go well together. And I treated it like a little piano, and I wrote a chord, and I showed it to her, and she said, "Joan, this is unplayable. This chord is unplayable." What do you mean? Even if you worked at it, it's unplayable? Joan, did you read the manual I gave you? No.
Well, that does sort of raise the question, how do you go about figuring out how to write for an instrument with which you aren't very familiar?
Well, you have to, it's sort of like going into a new town. You're meeting new people you're going into a new culture that has different parameters to it. So you have to kind of listen to that culture. I think the manuals, by and large, are not very helpful. I think you just have to listen to, let's say you're writing for violin, listen to a lot of violin. I was around the violin for a long time, so I absorbed a lot of information that I wasn't even aware of. And so when I went to write my violin concerto, I thought, oh, well, I better get the manual out, you know, double stops and all that. you can't, you know, it'll say, well, this double stop is more difficult than that one, but it depends on the speed, depends on the height, depends on where it's coming from. There's just too many variables for a manual to tell you exactly what to do with double stops, you know. So I just wrote the piece. I wrote it the best way I could, and I only made one mistake.
That's pretty good.
Technically. It's a question of knowing, being in that world, in that violin world, guitar world, organ world, whatever world it is, and really trying to understand what the DNA of that instrument is. Not so much the technique of it, but the DNA. You know what I mean? The personality of that instrument.
Are you usually able to, or do you usually choose to, show a piece for a particular instrument to somebody who plays that instrument just to make sure, for example, as you did with Sharon?
Absolutely. When I when I wrote this piece called Made in America, which was played by 65 community orchestras in 50 states.
Yeah, that was the big, so everybody sort of co-commissioned that piece.
That was a big deal. I had not really dealt too much with community orchestras. I had been dealing with level B and A orchestras, so this was kind of a new ball game for me. And I made one very smart decision. When I finished it, I took it to all my professional player friends, and I said, tell me about this part for an amateur orchestra player. They helped me so much. You know, they said, that's too high, that's too fast. Give that to the principal, but not to the section. They really saved me, actually.
So most of the orchestras that played the piece managed it okay.
It was amazing, just amazing. There was one really amateur orchestra, and they were determined to learn this piece. So they spent 8 months or 6 months on it. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of lead time, you know, and they got it. And it was really hard for them. But that was like one of the lower level orchestras. And then it went up from there. Everybody played it, including several youth orchestras, too. Mm-hmm.
And that had to be a very rewarding experience for everybody all around.
Oh, it was. It was. I went to 20 of the 65.
Wow.
And I conducted 8 of them. And I felt like I was on the campaign trail for living composers.
I'm talking with Joan Tower, who is a composer who now teaches at Bard, has taught at Bard College.
For
a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to be in residence at Illinois State University, as they're doing tomorrow night a recital of music, mostly of hers, but also a couple other people, in Kemp Recital Hall starting at 8 o'clock. Wanted to let people hear another of the pieces that will be on the program, quite different from Petrushka's. And since we're talking about writing for different instruments, there are, I think, five pieces on this program that are written for some solo instrument or
mm-hmm.
another.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have interesting titles. The piece that's going to open the program is for solo viola. Catherine Lewis will play it. She's on faculty there. And you've called it Wild Purple, 1998. Why that title?
Well, I always thought of the viola as having the color purple. I don't know why. I just made that connection.
You're not like the composer,
so
Michael.
I've written three pieces for viola. That one, the Wild Purple, which is actually pretty wild. It's a pretty virtuosic piece, very challenging piece. Then the second one I wrote is a viola concerto called Purple Rhapsody. And the last one is Simply Purple, which is a companion piece for Wild Purple, which is very slow, very meditative. So I got really going on the purple. And they're all written for one terrific violist, Paul Neubauer, who stalked me to get pieces for him. I was happy to oblige because he's just a wonderful player.
Well, in fact, he's the one we've got playing it here. Here's a portion of Wild Purple by Joan Tower and for solo viola here on Live and Local. Music called Wild Purple for solo viola, composition from 1998 by Joan Tower, who's with me here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. A recital of her music will happen tomorrow night during the Red Note Music Festival at Illinois State University. While we're sort of on the subject of titles, are there other, you said purple you associate with the viola, are there other instruments that you somehow associate with colors or with other concepts?
I don't associate, that one is the only one that I think, yeah, that uses color particularly related to that instrument. There is color in other titles, but it's related to other concepts. Like my last string quartet is called White Water. And it's a kind of a subtle depiction of water and sheets of white. And then another piece called Black Topaz, which is for piano and six instruments, and that has another meaning too.
Do you tend to name your pieces before or after or during the composition?
Mostly after. So that's a good question. Mostly after. I try to make the title yield to the piece.
So the piece happens.
Rather than the other way around.
So the piece happens first, and then you don't necessarily go into it with a concept?
Right. Mostly. Right. But, you know Debussy's Preludes?
Sure.
Yeah, for piano. They have wonderful titles. Well, I mean, they're just perfect, those titles, for those pieces. And I read somewhere that he gave those after he wrote the pieces.
Are those the pieces where you have things like snow falling and...
Yes, others? Footsteps in the snow.
Yeah, that's right.
And Sunken Cathedral. I mean, just incredible images that fit the piece, you know.
And what, we probably all assume that he had that in mind when he started out.
Yeah, apparently not.
Well, you have a piece here, for example, there's going to be a couple of solo pieces for piano. One is called Steps, and which one could perhaps guess at what that might have to do with, but then one called Throbbing Still.
Okay, what would you guess at the Steps?
Well, I could imagine that Steps could potentially have something to do, it could almost be like an etude where, you know, the piano does certain things technically, whether it's... half steps, whole steps, and playing around with those concepts, or could not.
No, unfortunately, wrong answer.
Well, I did read the program note, and I actually forgot what it said, so you'll have to remind me.
It's actually a takeoff. It's an homage to Debussy, his Footsteps in the Snow.
Oh, it is.
Yes, and it's these major seconds. It's not a virtuosic piece. It's a very slow, meditative piece. It's also written in memory of Milton Babbitt because when he died, they asked me to be a part of this memorial book that they put out for him. And so I said, well, I'd like to write a piano piece. So I did. And inside this piece, there is a 12-tone. There's some 12-tone grids going on here and there. That's my tribute to him. But the rest is really to Debussy.
And that's right. And you sort of commented in here that Babbitt didn't particularly like Debussy's music.
No, he didn't like Debussy at all.
So interesting sort of tribute. What about the title Throbbing Still, then?
That comes from a John Ashbery poem called No Longer Very Clear. And this radio station asked me to write a piece based on his poem, and I first said no because I don't understand his poetry. And they said, well, why don't you just take a look at this poem before you say no? So I did. And inside this poem were some beautiful images. And one of them was Throbbing Still. There are three other pieces in this suite that use other images taken from his poem. And this is the last one called Throbbing Still. And, well, there's historical references to composers that influenced me. There's a kind of a memory laying there. Stravinsky's in there. Chopin's in there. I think Beethoven is in there somewhere. So throbbing still is sort of an allusion to that.
And, you've just sort of set up a test for people who go to that recital to see if they can hear any of those.
Yeah, well, see, that's not
composers.
A good idea. Because then all they're doing is sitting there trying to figure
right.
out, where is that from?
But it could be a fun exercise, let's say, for somebody who'd heard the piece before without that knowledge.
I think the less knowledge you have listening to a piece, the better.
Enjoy it at face value.
Because then you're not so biased. You know, you're not focusing your... I hate these lectures that start out by, well, now in measure 64, you'll hear this trumpet come in with the first theme. So you sit there and you wait for the trumpet. You don't hear anything until the trumpet comes in, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I know when I'm talking about music, in front of a concert that I might be conducting, I'm more inclined to give them more of the history of it and rather than tell them, listen for this here, there, and everywhere. And maybe for the same reason.
That's good. I think it's good. The history around it is that's interesting to know about. But yeah. To bias the listeners, I think it's very dangerous, actually. And they put it under the umbrella of educational. Well, it may be educational, but I think it should be done after the fact, not before the fact, you know.
Well, people will have the opportunity to experience Joan Tower's music firsthand in quite a variety. A lot of music for solo instrument on this recital. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Kemp Recital Hall, music for solo viola, solo piano, solo saxophone, also some chamber music, and for percussion quintet as well. There will also be music by Mark Mellitz on that program and by Maxwell McKee. It's at Illinois State University. Part of their Red Note Music Festival, which continues through Thursday. And it's been a real pleasure to talk with Joan Tower and welcome her here to Live and Local. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
And here is that some of that piece that we were just talking about a moment ago, Throbbing Still, which is actually the fourth part of a suite of four movements for piano entitled No Longer Very Clear, poem of the same name by John Ashbery. And the pianist who will play it on Tuesday night is Blair McMillan. The pianist who plays it in this particular recording is Ursula Oppens here on Live and Local. Ursula Oppens playing music by Joan Tower called Throbbing Still, fourth movement of a suite for piano called No Longer Very Clear. That'll be played by Blair McMillan on a concert tomorrow night on the Red Note New Music Festival at Illinois State University in Normal. That concert in Kemp Recital Hall starts at 8 o'clock and will feature music of Joan Tower, as well as Mark Mellitz and Maxwell McKee, and featuring faculty members and guests of Illinois State University. Red Note Music Festival also has a concert tonight by the Spectral Quartet. That's at 8 o'clock in Kemp Recital Hall. And Wednesday night, also in the same place, no particular ensemble or focus, but a lot of different performers from the faculty at ISU and a lot of different composers represented on that program. Thursday, it'll be a concert by the ISU Symphonic Band conducted by Daniel Belongia, hoping I'm saying his last name right. In fact, I'll be talking with him on tomorrow's Live and Local, as well as composer Steve Danu, whose piece This World Alive, just composed last year, will be performed on that Thursday concert. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program today is made possible by the Danville Symphony Orchestra presenting Titans, Mahler's Symphony Number Symphony Number 1, and Beethoven's Violin Concerto with special guest Clara Jumi Kang this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in the Danville High School Auditorium. More information is available from the Symphony Office at 443-5300. Here's some music next by Jeff Tyzik. It's from his Concerto for Trombone and Orchestra, and it features trombonist James Pugh, who is on faculty here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. And he's not on the classical faculty, he's on the jazz studies faculty. He is a pretty remarkable performer, obviously a lot of experience in jazz, but he also is a regular trombonist for the band Steely Dan. He's in demand in many other types of music as well. He's featured here with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. The composer is conducting this final movement, the third movement called A Dance, from Jeff Tyzik's Concerto for Trombone and Orchestra. Thank you. Trombonist James Pugh with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Jeff Tyzik. In Tyzik's own Concerto for Trombone and Orchestra, we heard the final movement. There are three of them, and this one simply called Dance. Jim Pugh on faculty at the University of Illinois on the Jazz Studies program. And as it happens, the next music that I chose has a sort of slight connection. There is sort of a thread, no pun intended when you hear what I'm going to say, between Jim Pugh and this next music. I notice in the biography, which I hadn't read actually in advance of playing that music for Jim Pugh, that he says he's recorded chamber music with Yo-Yo Ma, the Silk Road Ensemble, the Graham Ashton Brass Ensemble, and many others. Well, the Silk Road Ensemble is the connection here to this next music that is performed by the Orchid Ensemble, who have appeared on Live and Local because they've also appeared in our listening area at least a couple of times. I was just looking to see if they're going to be in our area anytime soon. They're not. They're touring the Midwest, but not through Illinois. Orchid Ensemble consisting of Jonathan Bernard on marimba and other percussion, and then two Chinese musicians who play traditional Chinese instruments. Lan Tung, who is Jonathan's wife, plays the two-stringed arhu and other things at times. And on this recording, Mei Han plays zheng and percussion. Their current member actually is a local performer. At least she's living locally, Yuchen Wang. So the connection. This next piece is a traditional tune called Yaribon. And the note here says, in the 10th century, a number of Persian Jews traveled through the Silk Road to settle in Kaifeng in central China. Descendants of the community they founded still survive today, observing Jewish holidays and customs. And this arrangement of an Ashkenazi sacred song is a contemporary tribute to the fusing of these cultures. Yaribon, the name of this music, arranged by and performed by the Orchid Ensemble on Live and Local. music called Yaribon, a traditional Ashkenazi sacred song that was actually found in China and performed here by the Orchid Ensemble, which combines traditional Chinese instruments with contemporary percussion and other sounds. In this recording, Orchid Ensemble are the erhu player Lan Tung, or Lan Tung, and the zheng player Mei Han, and marimbist and percussionist Jonathan Bernard. Their zheng player is now Yuchen Wang. They were on our show. It's been almost 3 years now. Didn't play live, but we did have a conversation with them when they were performing in our area. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Tonight at 7 o'clock on the evening concert, it's the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, led by music director Edo DeVart. On the program, two works by Tchaikovsky, the Romeo and Juliet Fantasy Overture and the Nutcracker Suite, which sounds good any time of year. Also on the program, Copland's Third Symphony and music by Mark Nykrug. It's the Los Alamos Suite. The Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, tonight at 7 on the evening concert right here on FM 90.9. Coming up at 5 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from from NPR. They don't call themselves National Public Radio anymore. I noticed that at some point. Music next, inspired by Johann Sebastian Bach. In fact, it comes from a CD called Bach in Havana by the Canadian group, by the Cuban group Tiempo Libre, who played at the opening night party for the Krannert Center, two or three falls ago. I remember being at the concert and interviewed their leader at the time, Jorge Gomez. And all the music on here inspired by particular pieces of Bach, including this piece, which is called Timbach, so-called because it's a timba type of piece, inspired by the Prelude in D from Book 1 of the Well-Tempered Clavier for Keyboard. And here's what they have to say about it. For Cubans of our generation, timba is our music, the way rock and roll was the music of several generations of Americans. We lived it and breathed it in Havana. It kept us going when there was little in the way of food or opportunities to sustain us. Timba takes traditional Cuban forms, pumps them up with high-octane rhythms, jazz harmonies, and then adds, according to one's taste and predilections, additional flavors of hip-hop, rock, or ska. We've taken our hardcore timba and added in J.S. Bach. The lyrics are their own love song, they say, to Bach, praising his harmonia, polifonia, and sabiduria, that is to say, harmony, polyphony, and wisdom. Tiempo Libre, featuring their lead vocalist, who is Joaquin El Kid Diaz, on Live and Local.
Luché, que me creía que tú eras fácil hasta que llegué. Me di cuenta que con el tiempo tenía que seguir peleando esta vida dura, logrando sobrevivir. Tú, que diste todo al azar, sin darte cuenta que el mundo entero tu música iba a tocar. Yo te quiero decir, con lo que llevo dentro, serás mi energía, mi fundamento. Llegaste tú, con tu melodía, con tu armonía, polifonía, con tanta sabiduría. Llegaste tú, sin esperarte, llenaste un hueco en mi corazón y te quedaste. Sin darte cuenta que el mundo entero tu música iba a tocar. Yo te quiero decir, con lo que llevo dentro, serás bien.
armonía.
Pasillo nena, mira que si no, esto es tremendo problema. Mira, pasillo nena,
y tú que me diste, tú que me pusiste la gente
rosa. Pasillo nena, mira que si no, esto es tremendo problema. Mira, pasillo nena,
mira que eres bueno para el mundo entero. Ahí. Oh. Y mueve la cintura, muchacha, que tu estima con vos. Y ahí nada más, y nada más. ¡Vamos! Mira, y rompe el timbal.
Their CD Bach in Havana, that's the group Tiempo Libre, performing their own composition Timbach, or Timba, a type of music inspired by Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier Book 1, Prelude in D Major. You listen to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Here's a few things you can go see and hear live in our listening area tonight anyway. The Millikan University Jazz Combos are performing at Lock, Stock, and Barrel in Decatur at 6 o'clock. The weekly good old-fashioned Hootenanny is at the Rose Bowl Tavern in downtown Urbana tonight at 8 o'clock. Also in Urbana at the Assembly Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Champaign, it's Monty Python's Spamalot, one performance only, which starts at 7:30. And then tomorrow, the Eastern Illinois University Concert Band is performing at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston. That's tomorrow night, 7:30. And the Traditional Jazz Orchestra will be at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 5, followed by the Larry Gray Guitar Trio at 8 o'clock. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. It's 35 degrees at 5 o'clock.